I want to give you an overview of my perspective, which is based on various mefarshim, but not one mefarish specifically, and a lot of extra spice for myself, so take it with a grain of salt, of the whole parsha of Yosef and his brothers. It's a very difficult parsha. And we will speak about it this week from what is in this week's Sedra, and next week we'll continue it into how Yosef dealt with his brothers when they came down to Mitzrayim, and what Yosef did with them and why he did it, and the aftermath in Parshas Vayigash and Vayichi, right, also will have a connection to this. But when we get to Vayigash already, we'll have other topics, I think, also, and maybe even next week we'll mix it with others. But the major thing is this week. Okay, firstly, we have to give a few hakdamos. Yosef himself, and later on, Shevet Yosef, had a unique purpose, a unique function, that's a better word, unique function amongst the Shvatim, and amongst Klal Yisrael. They were the ones who would prepare the way for the other Shvatim to be able to do their tafkid. Where do we see this? Yoshua from Ephraim prepared the way for conquering Eretz Yisrael. Mashiach ben Yosef will prepare the way for Mashiach ben David. Yosef himself prepared the way for the Shvatim to come down to Mitzrayim. They were the trailblazers, the preparers. Could be for that reason, Menashe, even though they didn't ask to be put on Eber HaYarden, but Moshe Rabbeinu split the tribe of Menashe because a portion of Yosef had to be in together with the tribes that would settle in Eber HaYarden to help facilitate their settling there. And a chelek of Yosef had to be, Menashe and half of Menashe and Ephraim had to be in Eretz Yisrael to facilitate the other Shvatim settling there. Yosef was the trailblazer, the facilitator. In that respect, Yosef was different than the other brothers, insofar that each brother had one nida that they represented, which then became the nida of that shevet. Yehuda was Malchus. So the tribe of Yehuda became the Malachim. Yisachar was Talmud Torah, and the tribe of Yisachar became Talmid Chachamim, Dayanim, whatever. Okay. Yosef had all of the midos within him. He was like a miniature Yaakov. It said he looked like Yaakov. Doesn't just mean he looked facially like Yaakov. It means that just like Yaakov had all of these talents, abilities, capabilities, traits within him, and each of his children took over one of those traits, Yosef, in a small way, had all of them. He was like a small Yaakov. That's what it says, Ben Zikunim. Okay? And that was what it means, and that's why Yaakov recognized that, and he made him a ksonis pasim. It either means a coat of many colors, or, according to other Rishonim, it means a wristband that showed he was special. It's like the ushers in the movies have things on their shoulder that show that they're, I forgot they're called, there's a word for it. It shows that you're somebody special. You're the usher.
VIP.
As what?
VIP.
Yeah, but it's the shoulder piece is, show. There's a word for it, I remember what it was, right? That shows you somebody. He had a wristband.
Like a badge?
What?
A badge?
It's like a badge, but there's a fancy word for it. In any case, that's Ktsonis Pasim, was al pas hayad, by the wrist. So either it was a coat of many colors or something on the wrist. I think both of them represent this idea. Every shevet, every son, was one color. The colors represent different midos. Each one had his color. Yosef was multicolored. He had within him all of them because he had to facilitate and help the other brothers reach their potential, so he needed a little bit of all the different midos. If it was a wristband, the wrist, Yosef basically was the link between the Avos and the Shvatim. He was like the intermediary, Yosef. On the one hand, he was one of the Shvatim, but on the other hand, his children were Shvatim. So he was like an Av, but he was like a Shevet at the same time. Because he was supposed to facilitate the other Shvatim and pass on the potential that came from the Avos and then spread out to 12 different midos, Yosef was the one who spread them out. That's exactly what the wrist does. The purpose of the wrist is to take the potential energy from the muscles of the arm and diffuse it into the fingers. And then now you can use the muscles of the arm for practical things, to use your fingers. The place where it diffuses is the wrist. So Yosef was like the wrist. And in fact, the name Yosef is Pas, wrist, with a Yud and a Vav, two letters from God's name. And those two letters from God's name are the Vav. God's name is HaYehovah Yihyeh, Yud Kei Vav Kei. The Yud is the Yihyeh, the future, and the Vav is the present. Yosef took the present and facilitated it to go into the future. So is Yud Vav, and Pei Samech is Pas, is wrist. That was Yosef's function. He was the facilitator for all the other Shvatim. That was one preface. Second preface. And this, others say, Shonim already say it, early Achronim. Yosef and his brothers had a machlokas. What was their status at that point? The brothers held that they already were considered a nation, a Jewish nation, in formation. But they already had the status of Jews. They were no longer Stam B'nai Noach. They already were separated from the other nations. They were given extra mitzvahs. They had a mitzvah Gilanosha, a mitzvah Brismila, and that changed their status, and they already were considered a nation to themselves. Yosef held no. They would only become a nation to themselves when the Torah would be given. Until then, they were a nation in formation, but not a nation themselves. And therefore, Yosef held that since they were not a nation yet, then the brothers did not have the qualities. Yehuda wasn't a king yet, and Yisachar wasn't the Dayan yet, or whatever each one was. They were in the formation stage. And therefore, he was the one to facilitate that formation. The brothers held they already were a little nation, in a small way, and therefore they didn't anybody facilitate anything. And they looked at Yosef as usurping their functions. And that they considered a tremendous danger, because they saw Yosef trying to be the king and trying to be the Dayan and trying to usurp each one of their functions. All he was doing was trying to guide them and facilitate and bring out their potential. They saw that he was usurping it, and therefore they were afraid. This is Sfarno says, a little bit different way, but the same idea. He says that up until, and the Malbim says this too, up until now, Klal Yisrael came from one individual. And the other individuals in the family were pushed away. Yishmael was out of the picture. Esav was out of the picture. Now Klal Yisrael was going to be built from 12 people. Nobody was going to be out of the picture. But they felt that Yosef is trying to push them out of the picture. And everything he did, they saw in that respect. What did they see? Listen to the way the Torah describes it. Torah says that Yosef was Nar es b'nei Bilav es b'nei Zilpa, the b'nei ha-shvachos, he guided them, right? He Nar can mean to awaken. He awakened within them their potential, those directly, and the other ones who were more mechubad, the way he did it was to bring dibasam ro'el avihim, to speak to the father and to criticize them so the father would guide them. But he was the facilitator. He went through his father, though. With the more important brothers, he didn't feel he could do it directly. He had to do it through the father. With the less important brothers, he could do it himself. So here is Yosef, the facilitator, and the brothers think that he's trying to usurp. Not only that, but he's telling the father things about them that aren't true, at least in their eyes. And he's trying to get Yaakov to curse them, to push them out, throw them out of the house, and he should be the one to carry on Klal Yisrael alone. Like Yitzchak did at the expense of Yishmael, and like Yaakov did at the expense of Esau. That's what they saw. What did he say? What did he tell the father? So here the Mefarshim say, thinking the Sifsei Chachamim brings down, this depended on their machlokas. He said that they're eating Eiver Min Achai. They're eating meat taken from a live animal. What was the truth? They shechted an animal. They shechted it. They held, they were considered Jews. The halacha is, once a Jew shechts an animal, even though it's still moving, it's kosher. You can eat it right away, because the shechita permits it. A goy can't do that. A goy doesn't have a mitzvah of shechita. Shechita is irrelevant. A goy has to wait till the animal dies before he can eat it, because otherwise it's eiver min achai. For a Jew, the mitzvah of shechita determines when the animal is permissible to be eaten, even if it's still moving. But it's shechted, you can eat it. A goy can't eat the animal till it stops moving, because for him shechita is irrelevant. Yosef held that they had a din of goyim, and therefore the brothers were shechting animals, tearing off legs immediately and roasting it before the animal stopped moving. For a Jew that's okay, for a goy it's not. Yosef held they were goyim, he held they were eating Eiver Min Achai. They held they were Jews, they held that was okay to do. Had Yosef gone to Yaakov and said, look, I hold that they're goyim and what they're doing is wrong, they hold they're Jews and what they hold they're doing, then Yaakov could have decided what he holds and decide to give him Musa or not. But he didn't. He didn't say over the facts. He told over his commentary. He just went to his father and said, they're eating Eiver Min Achai. That was his conclusion. He didn't tell his father the facts. He told him his commentary. And when the Vietnam War was on, so there was a lot of discussion in America that many news programs were not reporting the facts of what was going on, but their commentary. And people couldn't distinguish between commentary and facts, and they thought they were getting the news. So they made a law in America on news programs that when it's commentary, they have to put clearly commentary. This is not news. This is our interpretation of the news. Because people aren't too smart to know. They have to be told exactly what's a commentary and what's the news. Had Yosef given over the facts, wouldn't have been a problem. But he gave his commentary as if they were the facts. His commentary on the facts. They're eating Eiver Min Achai. That's only according to your opinion. If you would tell Yaakov the facts, maybe he would conclude they're not eating Eiver Min Achai. What was the second thing? They're calling the children of the Shvachos Avodim. Because, according to Yosef, that they are all goyim, so the what's it called, basically, by considering themselves Jews, okay, these B'nei HaShvachos were considered Avodim. But according to him, they weren't Avodim, because they're all Goyim, so not Avodim. They're all in the same status. And that they were, what's it called, being promiscuous with the daughters of Canaan. Yosef was extra machmer in these things. Right? As we know, Yosef HaTzadik, he had all these nisyonos with sexual things and he overpowered them. He considered any kind of contact with the Goyish women promiscuous, immoral. When in fact, it was just for business purposes and they didn't consider it immoral. So, and in fact, Yosef had a reason why he wanted to separate himself from these Goyish people, because there was no other separation. They all had a din of Ben Noach, and therefore it was very important to keep a very big distance, otherwise there's no difference. They held they were Jews. There's already a difference. So they don't have to be so careful to separate. The separation is we're different people. We have a different status. That separates us. But according to Yosef, that status didn't separate them, so they had to make an extra separation. And he held the brothers weren't making that separation. If you look at the Psukim, you'll see how they misunderstood what Yosef was doing. Pasuk says like this, Hayaroa es echot batzon, behunar, he guided them, shepherded them like a shepherd, together with the sheep. Just like you shepherd sheep, he shepherded his brothers. And he did it directly with the B'nei HaShvachos, with the other ones he did it through his father. And his intention wasn't to usurp what they were, not to push them out, but to fulfill his role as he saw it as a facilitator. Then it says, V'Yisrael ohav es Yosef michol banav. It doesn't say Yaakov, it says Yisrael. The name Yisrael is Yaakov as the progenitor of a nation. Yaakov, looking ahead to how this nation is going to be formed, loved Yosef. Mikol Banov does not mean more than the other sons. It means from his other sons. Because he loved his son so much, his love for Yosef emanated from that, because Yosef was the one who's going to bring out the potential. That's what really happened. Yaakov Yisrael, ohav es Yosef mikol banov. Not more than them. The mem is not mikol, but from all of them. Because he loved all his sons, he loved Yosef as an emanation from the love of his sons, because he was the one who was going to bring out the potential. So Yosef's, the love of Yosef emanated from all the sons. But what did they see? Right? And the Asalo Ksonis Pasim, and because of that, he made him this coat of many colors, which represented the fact that he would, be the one to facilitate all the different colors that the Shvatim would represent. And he had within him all the different qualities in a small way to be able to facilitate each one to bring out their qualities in an intense way. Or a wrist thing where he was the link between the potential of the Avos and the actual Shvatim, were like the fingers, and he was the wrist, he was in between. Yeah?
So where does this fit in over here that he was jealous?
Wait, we'll get to that in 1 second. Wait.
And also, why is he being done like this?
What?
Why is he being like done like this? Like,
because here, to be done like this is how you look at somebody else. But if you hold that they need Musar, and the father could give it, then that's more important than, maybe he was done of the Kafschos.
But he knew that they wouldn't be Mekabel that Musar, right?
From him. That's why he went to his father.
Or even from the father, because they don't agree with him.
Well, fine. So then he assumed that his father would ask him, find out what's doing.
Why did he give it facts?
What? Because he was so sure that he was right. He was 17 years old, right? That to him, this was the fact. That was a mistake. Yosef made a mistake.
But like in our lives, when we're so sure that someone's doing something wrong, aren't we still supposed to find something like positive and not assume?
Yeah, but you're still supposed to give Musar.
Yeah,
being done the Chavschus does not exempt you from giving Musa. You're supposed to go to the person and say, in my mind, you probably have to, but in case you are, I have to give you Musa. Okay. Okay, then it says, so what's it called? Then it says, Vayiru Echav. What did the brothers see? How did they see this? This is how Yosef saw it. How did the brothers see it? Ki Ohav Aviyem es Yosef Mikol Echav. It doesn't say Mikol Banav. And it doesn't say Yisrael. It says the father. Our father as a father, not as the beginning of a nation, not as the head of a nation, loves this brother better than us, at our expense. Not Mikol Banav, Mikol Echav. It's at our expense. It's not that the love emanates from us. It's Mikol Echav. It's sibling rivalry. And Yosef is trying to endear himself to Yaakov and get us pushed out. He's a rodef. He's endangering the future of this nation because the nation is supposed to be built on 12 of us, and he's trying to push us out like Yishmael and like Esav, and he's going to do everything. That's what they saw. Right? That Ohavis Avihem, not Yisrael as Yisrael, but as the father, personal father, Mikol Echav, not Mikol Banav, Mikol Echav, it's sibling rivalry, right? Vayisnu Oso, therefore they felt separate from him. They didn't feel he's part of the team. Ahava means you have a commonality, an Echad, the word Ava is Echad. You feel a connection, a bond. They didn't feel a bond with him. He's a rival. He's trying to get us out. He's not part of us. He's not one of us. He's against us. So they felt that distance, that's called Sina. Shalom means, like we've explained in the past, Shlemus, where everybody does their part. They couldn't include him in speaking Shalom because he's not part of this. He doesn't want to be part of the team. He wants to do it all himself. And he's trying to get us pushed out. That's how they saw it. He saw it as he's part of the team, but his part on the team is to get the team going. And they saw it as him, a rival, trying to take over what the team is supposed to be doing. And then, to make it worse, okay, it says that Yosef then started having dreams. There's two kinds of dreams. There's prophetic dreams that come through Malachim and whatever. And then there's dreams that are generated by what a person has on his mind. Yosef's dreams in the end turned out to be prophetic, obviously, and he held they were prophetic. They held that they were the product of what he's thinking about all day. What was the dream? We're in the field, and your sheaves of grain, which represent you and your existence, your sustenance, is bowing down to me. So what did they say? You see what's on his mind. He wants to rule over us. He wants to be the king and push us out. That's what they said to him. Hamaloch timloch aleinu? Do you think that we are going to agree and acquiesce to your being the king? That you're going to take over here? And if we don't acquiesce, are you going to do it against our will? Hamoshal timshol banu? And therefore they continued to hate him. Because they saw again, he's trying to pull everything away from them. He's trying to take over. And he didn't see that. This was not my dream. And where did they say, where's it coming from, his dreams? What do you think about during the day? The whole day he's thinking about taking over. And that's what he dreams about at night. Yosef said, no, these are not what's it called, dreams that I created. They're prophetic dreams. There's something to do with the future. So he looked at it as a nevuah, and they looked at it as this is what's on his mind. Yeah.
Did the Shvatim have a right to think this way, about Yosef?
Everything again. We'll see in 1 second why they were. Yeah, they made a mistake. Let's say at this point, okay. In a few seconds, we'll say differently. And then Yosef has another dream. Now even his father and mother are bowing down to him, right? Sun, the moon, the star, everybody's bowing down to him. So again, they see this as Yosef really taking over. and he sees it's another prophecy. Yaakov understood that this is probably a prophetic dream, and he anticipated in hell, when is it going to come true? But they didn't see it like that. They saw a pattern, and they judged Yosef on a pattern, which they had a right to do. We'll see in 1 second what the problem was. So then, they met as a Beis Din, the Sfarno says, to decide what to do with him when he came to them. And they voted that he's a Rodef, and the halacha is you're allowed to kill a Rodef. Outright. They said, you know what? Instead of killing him outright, let's just throw him into a pit and let him die on his own. We don't want to actually shed his blood, but we want him out of the picture. We have a right to kill him. We're not going to kill him with our own hands. We're going to let him die. And they felt that they were 100% what's it called, justified. Reuven, right? And then the Basco went out and said, "V'nirei mayu chalamosav." So let's see what his dreams are going to be, meaning that they're prophetic dreams. No one else heard that except for Reuven. Reuven heard it, and he understood that this is not so simple. Maybe he's not a Rodef. Maybe there's another way of learning this. He knew that if he tried to convince the brothers, they wouldn't accept it. So he said, you know what? Let's not kill him outright. No, they originally wanted to kill him outright. Right? Let's kill him. Reuven said, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him into a pit and let God decide if he wants to save him or not. We won't actually kill him. We'll throw him into a pit. Leave it up to God to decide what to do with him. We'll just leave him in the pit. And Reuven's intention was to come and get him out afterwards, because he already decided that maybe this isn't so simple. Maybe these dreams are not self-induced. Maybe they're the prophetic. Okay. But they sat as a Beis Din, it says. And they voted him to be killed. How was that the case? So the Ramban says they all didn't like him, because he brought, what's it called, Dibasam Ra'ah was against the B'nai HaShvachos, and the other brothers thought he was muscling in on them and taking over. So nobody liked him. Rashi says the B'nai HaShvachos did like him. He took care of them. It was the other brothers that he spoke about to Yaakov. So the Chara, it should come out that at least the B'nai HaShvachos should have protected him. That's what the Ramban says on Rashi. But if you think about it, if they sat down as a Beis Din and they voted, the majority were B'nai Leah, not the B'nai HaShvachos. Who was there? Binyamin wasn't there. Yosef wasn't there. So that left 10. Four were B'nai HaShvachos, and six were B'nai Leah. So it was 6 against 4 to convict. That's why they voted him to kill him. And they felt 100% justified. And then they were very magnanimous to listen to Reuven, to not kill him outright, to leave him in a bor, let the Ribbono Shel Olam decide. Or as the Orach Chaim HaKadosh brings a Zohar, they knew that there were snakes and scorpions in the bor. They said, if we kill him, we are Bali Bechira, and it could be he's not liable to a death penalty, but we, with our Bechira, can kill him even if he doesn't deserve to die. But animals don't have Bechira. So we'll leave it up to the Ribbono Shel Olam to decide if he wants to kill him with snakes and scorpions or not. So we're not going to take the responsibility. We'll leave it up to God. And then, Lamaisa, they decided, instead of killing him, that's what Yehuda said, Ma Betza, what are we going to gain by killing him? The whole thing is just to get him out of the picture here, because he's trying to usurp everything and destroy this nation. He's a danger. He's a Rodef. He's a pursuer. Halacha is you're allowed to kill somebody like that. We have a right to kill him. We had a little bit of mercy. We're not going to kill him. We'll let the snakes and scorpions kill him if God wants to. What's the purpose of that? We don't have to kill him to get him out of the picture. Let's sell him. Get him out of the picture. Let him live. Let him not be in the picture. So they felt that not only weren't they doing anything wrong, they were extremely magnanimous in what's it called, in not killing him, which they had the right to do, just getting him out of the picture to save the nation, because he was a danger to this nation that was in formation, because he's trying to usurp everything, and we're just going to sell him as a slave, get him out of the picture without killing him. So they thought, not only aren't they doing anything wrong, they're really being merciful on him, and magnanimous. That's how they saw it. Okay. So they made a mistake. So why were they punished? Why was Mechiras Yosef such a sin that, according to some, the whole Shibud Mitzrayim came as a kapara for Mechiras Yosef? And there are many other, the Asara Arugei Malchus had to die as a kapara for Mechiras Yosef. They made a mistake. So the Torah tells us, no. They made a mistake, but they generated the mistake. Because there was kina, vayikanu bo'echav. Deep down, they were jealous. And it says in Pirkei Avos, hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod motzi mesa adam min ha'olam. Means it takes you out of reality. When you're jealous, or you have a taiva, or you're looking for kavod, you don't see things the way they really are. You see them the way you want to see them. If they would not have been jealous of Yosef, deep down, they would not have interpreted what he was doing the way they did. They would have been done on the kapschos. Totally. But because deep down they were jealous, and they didn't realize that, they distorted everything and saw it in a negative light. And therefore, it wasn't an innocent mistake. It was a mistake that was generated by kina. That they could have controlled. And therefore they were held responsible. Because really, the way they saw things, they were justified in what they did. The way Yosef saw things, he was justified. Yosef was held responsible because he was irresponsible. He was a kid. He should have dealt with it. He shouldn't have gone to Yaakov and told him his commentary, should have told him the facts. He should have handled it differently. But he handled it in an immature way. So he's held responsible to a certain degree. The brothers, had they not been jealous, they would have seen things in a different light. They wouldn't have distorted them. But because they were jealous, and they didn't even realize that jealousy, they thought that they were justified. They saw things, every single thing convinced them that they're 100% right based on the facts. But those facts were distorted because of their jealousy. Yeah.
Then what triggered this jealousy? That they're not being loved, or...
That Yaakov is giving favoritism to Yosef, right, over them.
But so what? Like children have that.
I understand, but that's why the Gemara says we should learn from here that a father should never favor one child over another. Because of that, right, it led to the jealousy, which, according to me, led to their seeing things in a totally distorted way, feeling, and led to Mechiras Yosef.
They're like tzaddikim.
No, even tzaddikim. Their kina was not, well, he's getting something we didn't get. But their kina was in building Klal Yisrael, right? That was a very high, noble thing. But that they felt that he's getting something he doesn't deserve in that nation, that's very, very high kina. It's not kina because my personal thing. It's me as part of the nation, but it's still kina. And once you let your emotions get to you, right, you don't see things clearly anymore. And they built a whole case, and they didn't even realize that kina. They didn't feel it. They thought that they're seeing this totally objectively. But once there's a little bit of kina, it's already subjective. Once it's subjective, you've distorted it completely. So they thought they built a case against him, which was ironclad. But the problem was, it was based on a little bit of jealousy. Not, what's it called, cheap, just plain ordinary jealousy, but jealousy that was based on very high things, but still jealousy. And once you're jealous, you don't see things the way they really are. You see them where you want to see them. Now you're not objective, you're biased. You have your negias. And once you have negias, you distort everything. That was the idea. Yeah.
So what were they supposed to do if they didn't even realize they were jealous?
What were they supposed to do? To really make a cheshbon and nefesh and see if
they
the...
What? They completely thought objectively that they were right.
They thought they were objective. But yeah. They made more of a cheshbon and nefesh. Maybe they would have come to the source of why they were coming to this conclusion. And realize that... I told you, I think last week I fell. Still, my back is still killing me. Oh, I didn't tell you. We were in here last week. A week ago, Thursday, it was raining. I was at a simcha, and unfortunately, outside they had these marble floors, which are extremely slippy when it rains. And I told my wife, be very careful, it's slippery, and the next second, I was on my back. And really, I mean, it knocked the air out of me. I couldn't breathe for about a minute, trying to, but I couldn't. I went for x-rays, whatever. Nothing's broken, but my lungs are bruised, my ribs are bruised, my back is bruised. It takes about 2-3 weeks to go away. So it doesn't hurt except when I breathe. So it's not so terrible. But when I cough, that is excruciating pain. So I try not to cough, which is not good, because they get pneumonia like that. So I have to cough, and it hurts. So if you see that I'm struggling with the coughing, it's not stopped. That's what's going on. I thought I told you, so if I didn't tell you, it looks pretty weird. But that's the explanation. See, you can judge things if you knew all that. That's exactly what happened with Yossi. I'm not as weird as you think, right? There's really an explanation. But you didn't know the explanation, so, okay, that's the explanation. In any case, but that's the thing. Sometimes a person thinks he's 100% justified, but if he'd really make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, he would see that maybe what's motivating him is not 100% objective. And they should have made that cheshbon ha-nefesh. Yeah.
But maybe if that was better communication, it would have realized that it wasn't favoritism and that his love was wrong.
Excellent, because that's what it says. B'terem yavo aleihem. Before he had a chance to come to them, they already plotted to kill him. If he had come to them and they said, let's sit down and talk about this, there would have been a communication, maybe it never would have happened. But they judged him from afar without giving him a chance to speak and tell them. They never spoke to each other. You're exactly right. It's a problem of communication. That also was a problem. But because they had that sina, which means distance, and the kina deep down, they weren't interested in speaking to him. And that was also a problem. Maybe that's what they should have done. Had the sina and kina not been there, underlying it, they would have spoken to him. But they couldn't. And they thought they were justified in not speaking to him because why pretend that we're friendly? Let's show him that we're not. But in truth, that all of this sounded good to them, but they're being motivated by that underlying kina and sina, right, which they didn't even feel that was there. Yeah.
Why did they give him Musar to Yosef?
They could have, but like we said, they already judged him as an evil person, and giving him Musar perhaps would just make him worse.
And also, if he's a real thief and there's a penalty, like, don't you have to kill the person? You can't be like...
No, you don't have to kill him. You have to do what will save your life. In other words, there's no chiyuv to kill a rodef. There is a reshus. If somebody comes to kill you, you can kill him first. But if you can save your life without killing him,
then you can't.
Shoot him in the leg, right? Then you only have to shoot him in the legs. You can't kill him.
And also, do we know the perspective of Yosef throughout this judgment and being put into the pit?
Yosef obviously held that he was not doing anything wrong. And they were the evil ones. Next week, when we see how Yosef reacted when he had them in his hands, we'll see, but from Yosef's perspective. We'll add a little bit to this also. I just wanted to give you, we didn't go to all the details. I just wanted to give you the basic idea. Next week we'll fill it in with a lot more. and go to Yosef's side when he had them, what he did, why he put them through everything he put them through. Why didn't he just, you know, let, we're brothers, let's make up and finish. Yeah.
Is Yaakov a little bit at fault because he was
yes.
the one who started the cause
yes.
of brothers?
The Gemara says that we learn from here, Yaakov should have realized the dynamics of what's going on with his children and not shown favoritism to Yosef, even though his intention was 100% okay. But he should have realized that he is adding fuel to the fire over here. The Gemara faults Yaakov. Okay, it's still not in your minds very clear. Right? It's we're just putting the threads together. Next week it'll be much easier. Since you have the basis, we'll put a lot of the details in. It'll make a lot more sense. But I think I've convinced you about the basics of it. Now next week we'll put in the padding.